You're listening to The Comedy Cellar, live from the table on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Comedy Cellar Show here on Sirius XM Channel 99. My name is Noam Dworman. I'm the owner of The Comedy Cellar. I'm at the back table of The Comedy Cellar with my very dear friend, Mr. Dan Natterman.
How do you do?
Are we dear friends? And I don't think as much as anybody can be friends with Dan, we're friends. Dan, I mean, actually, that wasn't nice. You have close friends, right?
I do. Yeah, I have friends. Do you feel friendship?
You have intimacy issues.
I certainly do. Yes, but we don't. Noam and I don't talk on the phone. I do have friends with whom I talk on the phone and with whom I get together outside of comedy. Noam is not one of them. But maybe that will change at some point.
Why would I want to talk on the phone? I see you for hours every night.
That's the sign of true friendship, not needing to talk on the phone.
That's right. And not having to say you're sorry.
Okay. Well, that's from Love Story.
Okay. And we have some guests. Maybe they'll become friends.
I won't call you, though. Sorry. I won't call you on the phone, though.
No, maybe you guys will become friends.
Okay.
You people. I'm doing it already. Okay.
Anyway, is that a trans joke?
No, I didn't mean it as a trans joke. So, Mr. Noah Garden-Schwartz, who's a writer, a comedian and a writer for...
The Mrs. Maisel Show. What's it called?
The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. That's a show, Noam, about stand-up comic in the 50s. We'll talk about that in a bit.
It's a sitcom?
It is a
it's like
dramedy.
Dramedy, if you will. It's an hour long.
And that's on Amazon.
Amazon
Prime, I guess.
Yeah,
I get that.
Okay. So Noah is a writer for that, and we'll talk about it.
And our guest of honor, I guess, Jay McBride.
Yes, thank you.
That's Jay, not Jane.
J-A-Y-E, who is a... I know, why does it matter? But anyway, who is a transgender comedian based in New York City.
Correct.
Love the phrase "guest of honor," I guess.
Right. Well, because he does. She doesn't work here. She doesn't work here,
sure.
and you work.
Right.
Okay. So,
I'm trying to get a waitress job, though. So, if you guys are hiring,
so
they're always hiring.
So the first question is this: Is it still noteworthy that you're transgender?
I don't know that it's noteworthy, but people still react to it. You know, I mean, like maybe not in New York City because you guys, you know, New York's woke. Woke AF, but you know, if I go to Nebraska or something like that, they're still like,
I think it's
right.
Noteworthy right. Because I am assuming you talk about it on stage.
Yes.
Therefore, that distinguishes you from the average comedian who does not have that experience.
Right. I mean,
there's something different.
Yeah, I think it's different, but I think everyone, you know, I don't want to make it sound like that's all I talk about. You know, everyone talks about their life a little bit. But yeah, I definitely bring up stuff about that, you know, about like my dad not accepting it, about trying to date, about, you know, my childhood. So I think it's stuff that other people talk about, but because I'm trans, I think it's just a different spin than a lot of people.
I think
that'd
be fascinating. Let's face it, we've heard enough jokes about, you know, the typical topics that people talk about.
Right.
Your dad doesn't accept you?
Well, he's dead now, so he's fine with it.
He didn't accept you?
He was not a fan of this whole thing. He was, like, he died when I was 18, so it was before I actually transitioned, but I was a very feminine child, and he was not a fan.
Did he know that you were trans, before he passed?
I think he thought I was gay, just based on, you know, some of the talks I've had, you know. One of my memories, like when I was like 10 or so, we were watching TV and like these drag queens and female impersonators came on the TV and I'm looking at him like, that's it. That's what I could do for a living. You know, I was so psyched. And then he walked in to me and my brothers. He's like, if any of you turn out like that, I'll kill you.
This is a Catholic home?
Yes. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And that's part of it. I mean, Dad. Does your dad probably didn't accept you either? But that's
no. He accepted me.
He did accept you.
I don't. I think he would have had a hard time with a trans kid. If I had to be honest, I don't know, but I would imagine it would have been difficult for him.
It was not just Catholic, but very Republican, very military. You know. So
What age did you realize that there was
I'm serious.
Disconnect.
We should hang. He should be. He should be the guest of honor.
That there was a disconnect between your biological sex and your psychological sex.
Oh, right. I knew it all. I mean, I didn't know the name for it, and I didn't know how to describe it, but I knew there was something wrong, like, real early, you know? My earliest memories, you know? But when I was five, I remember there was this county fair upstate New York. That's where I'm from, and they had, like, a bucket of toys for boys and a bucket of one for girls. So, of course, I picked into the girls' one. I was like, that's it, you know? And there...
I want to ask you a question.
Sure.
Now, there's no questions. You know, in this day and age,
I'll answer everything.
In this day and age, you can get tarred with
7 inches
epithets. just
no, not really.
Just for asking the wrong question.
Ish, I don't know.
But privately, we all think things that we can't say out loud, right?
And yeah, everyone's like.
So this is my question.
Okay.
Seems to me, for instance, we've all modern society has come to the conclusion that people who are gay are born that way. Period. Either it's genetic or something in the environment of the womb or whatever it is, which actually to me seems more the case because identical twins are not
right.
always gay, although they're more likely to be. So that would imply something other than straight genetics.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, so you think there is something that happens in the womb that could alter the sexuality or the sexual preference?
Yeah, I think that's more. I think that
if they have too many brunches, then
environmental in the womb seems to me, without, you know, what I mean, I have no basis, seems to me more likely than just a gene, because if it was just a gene, we'd presume that identical twins would both be gay.
Okay.
Just like they're both the same height, both the same, but they're not. So there's some other kind of explanation. And I know that, like, twins don't necessarily get the same nourishment. They don't, even though they're in the same womb, they don't exactly necessarily have the same environment.
No, but it's as close to a control as you can get.
So now, but it seems to me that we allow that you're born that way and it's nothing to do with you, depending on kind of how we feel about that sexual thing. For instance, pedophiles, we don't give them that break. Oh, they must have been born mm-hmm. that way. Pedophiles, we call them monsters, but being attracted to children is no different on the face of being attracted to men or women or children or whatever it is that you're attracted to. So I'm totally ready to believe that pedophilia is something that you're born with. And then next question, but maybe you don't. The question is, do we know that transgender, that you're born transgender?
That's what they think. That's the current consensus of thinking in the scientific community.
Or is that what I'm suspecting is that that's somehow because it's the kind of the cause of acceptance of the day,
the cause du jour.
The cause du jour, and I don't mean that in a flip one, so that and because we want to be good to that cause. Well, they must be born that way. I mean, how does anybody know?
Right.
I mean, born
like,
that way. What do you know about the science of that?
The pendulum definitely swung. I mean, it's at a point now where if everyone says, like, I might be trans, like, you know, and everyone just assumes, you know. So I know there are people who probably aren't trans as kids that may be coming forward. That might be the case. But I think it's not nearly as much as people assume. But what the current thinking is, like, there actually are identical twins where one's trans and one isn't. But they think it's in the womb as well. Because we all, basically at birth, we all start out female. We have, like, until about 12 weeks.
At conception.
Yeah. We all start out female.
Yeah.
At about 12 weeks or so, that's when your chromosomes will send out a signal to release certain hormones that will, you know, determine your secondary sexual characteristics as male or female. And they think at that point, something goes wrong. And that's why people assume they're one gender versus the other.
Now, you've used that term gone wrong a number of times already. So many times that I think,
I haven't said you're wrong.
No, gone wrong. You said something's
gone
wrong.
Okay.
Which, like, you know, if it came out of my mouth, somebody might accuse me of mm-hmm. bigotry. You think it's something that's gone? You think it's a mishap?
Well, ideally, she would be the sex physically that she feels she is psychologically.
Right. I'm definitely. You know, I'm not. Let's. How do you say it? God's plan. You know. It's. I'm not saying I regret it or anything.
Well,
like
someone
that.
Who's born but, a midget is not something's gone wrong. That's
right.
Just.
True. Right. I guess I should be more like, you know,
no,
just the way it comes up. But I think.
But it could be that something's gone wrong.
Well, it's not ideal. Ideal right. would be she was born psychologically and biologically
right.
the same.
No, but
gender.
Something's gone wrong implies that maybe there was a trauma or a nutrition or uh-huh. something. In other words, that the same exact fetus if nothing had gone wrong. Could have been born. You could have been born
right.
a dude who felt like a dude.
Oh yeah,
but
I mean,
something
totally.
Went wrong.
Gone
a midget
wrong
will always be born a midget.
Yeah, gone wrong has a negative connotation. So
true.
Well, like
so
I said,
that's just like semantics in terms.
No,
of
No, it's not just semantics. It's not. To me, it's not just semantics.
Well, I never realized I did that. But
I would say
okay.
gone wrong is I. Said,
gays is, would not say, "Oh, something went wrong."
Mm-hmm.
In the womb.
No, but being transgender has very real and very difficult consequences. At a minimum, you need to have a great deal of medical help in order to conform to your psychological nature.
Right. You're right. I never looked at it that way, where I say gone wrong. I just mean, like, you know, when I say
and thankfully
wrong,
for modern medical science, we can do that, because 150 years ago, you couldn't. You would be physically a male for the rest of that would be it.
Right, right. I probably would have killed myself like 20 years ago, too, you know, quite honestly.
But do you think, well, that's a question I always ask when we have transgender people on the show, which comes up a few, which we've had a few, is you don't think you could simply live a life being feminine? That is, you say you like, you know, the girls' toys.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever feminism, being feminine means, you like to wear women's clothes, you like to have your hair long, you know, and all of that. You don't think you could, but with a male, well, whatever it would mean.
No, yeah, I get it.
You know, you don't
no,
think,
I get
if,
what you're
you, if you if you did all those things, but you had a male body, you think that would have been intolerable for you.
Yeah, because you're still, at the end of the day, you're looking at yourself in the mirror, and it's not what you think it should be. You know,
you know, it's such a jumble what we're told to believe, because you're describing that as a young boy,
uh-huh.
you always kind of wanted the girls' toys and all that
right,
stuff.
Right, I just
right?
felt like, I knew I wasn't a boy. I knew it wasn't like my brothers.
Right,
I just didn't know what to call it.
But within like a heterosexual world, we're also it's also rammed down our throats. There's no difference in what toys your children are supposed to want to play with, and a girl's supposed to want to play with boy toys, and now they have genderless toy aisles now because of the whole notion, which I think is you know, being a dad, it's absurd, because I cannot get my little boy to play with Barbie dolls, and I can't get my daughter
right.
to watch an Iron Man movie. It would make the household so much easier.
No, but I don't think they're traumatized. You know, probably they could pick out whatever toy they want.
Yeah, absolutely,
and then
absolutely whatever they want. No,
you know,
I try to get my daughter into superheroes, you know, uh-huh. just so that we can all be on the same page in the house. You know, you can't do it. Or my
Wonder Woman. She doesn't like Wonder Woman?
Barely. Barely.
Can you get your son to watch Frozen?
Yeah, my daughter feels Wonder Woman is patronizing. Like, you know, you want to just because I'm a girl, you want me to watch Wonder Woman, and my son, no, it's these gender things they're very. They're within these kids. It's not
environment. Oh, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And that's what I think, if you look at it that way, it's like, now put it in my life. I was the one who would have wanted to watch Frozen and would have not wanted to watch superhero movies at the time.
Is Frozen a feminine thing? What is
Frozen? Well,
Frozen could go either
I don't
way.
Want to get sure. bogged down into Frozen, but I'm not familiar
with it. I've actually never even seen Frozen. I just know
it's awesome.
Princess Elsa.
It's a great movie.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Sure.
Well, I like fried green tomatoes. Now, what that says about me is anybody's guess. But
well, Kathy Bates. I mean,
was she in Fried? Oh, that's right. She was in Fried. She was. She was like hearing the story.
Kathy
in the
Kathy
present
Bates transcends gender roles. She's for everyone.
That's right.
I want to talk about how Jay. The reason you're here is
she
because
she played a bearded lady. What does that tell you? Right? American Horror Story.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah.
But anyway, the reason you're here is because we had that discussion with Guy Branum. He was saying in his article that we don't have enough gay comedians, which is not, I don't think is true whatever enough would mean. We didn't have a proportional amount of gay comedians. And he said we didn't have any trans comedians. And so we asked him to recommend. Noam said, well, we're certainly open to it. Noam's the owner of the club, as he mentioned. We're certainly open to it. We just haven't come across any. And I think you asked Mehran Kagani. Do you know any trans comedians that would be good here? And your name came up. Is that?
I don't know this. Yeah.
No. How did you hear about Jay McBride?
Steven booked her. How did I hear about Jay McBride?
Oh, you didn't hear about
well,
Jay.
Well, Mehran told you.
I think Mehran told Steven.
Yeah.
Well, but the point is we were discussing. Well, we. There's been no transgender comedian that's even auditioned for the part that we've even heard of.
Well, right. What's his name? Guy Branum did recommend one transgender comedian. He gave me a name. And I looked her up on the internet. And, I mean, just not a peep. Like even on the it just, this was not a person who was ready
right,
to perform here.
That's where it puts you in a difficult decision where there's still an element of quality control that has to come in regardless of what background that comedian is fulfilling. So it's like, just because you finally got the name of a transgender comedian, they still have to be
a certain level of comedian.
They
still have to write a joke.
Exactly.
Learn how to write a joke. You
right.
know?
They got to go over. This girl was not going to go over.
Right.
So I didn't follow up. I haven't seen your comedy. Mm-hmm. I can tell you, I don't know, that's why that if you go over, I'd be thrilled to put on.
No, I appreciate that. But yeah, I mean, it's...
Why would I care?
Do you feel that people do care? Do you feel that you've run up against prejudice in that
regard? Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I feel like it's gone both ways. I mean, I was telling Stevie, I'm doing a conference just for trans people tomorrow, which is
so you're performing at it.
Yeah, so that's where I make a lot of my money, and I wouldn't have that opportunity if I weren't. But by the same token, I know that I'm like, if there's like a comedy club in like, you know, Evansville, Indiana, they're not going to want to book me. You know, that their audience isn't going to want to listen to trans people.
I got to tell you, go ahead. You want to say something?
Well, I was wondering, do you enjoy performing for all trans audiences? Like, because I do a lot of Jewish shows, right? And sometimes those shows are nightmares. I mean, sometimes they're great, but sometimes it's actually worse to perform for an audience where it's pretty much everyone that's theoretically supposed to be on board with what you're saying, but there's so many different opinions, or maybe because they're trans, they'll be much more critical of what you have to say about your experience versus theirs. Do you have a preference? Like, do you
I do love performing in front of, especially like the younger trans people, like in their 20s and that, like college kids. You know, I do get a kick out of that. They're just so with it. They're like, they're really into it. But I actually, I started in Albany. I used to do Elks clubs, you know, so I they didn't want to hear that, you know? I mean, sure. Or if they did, they were putting on a good face.
So did you ever perform just as a female comic without coming out to the audience?
Yeah, I did that at first when I first started, but then
And did that work?
Well, I was decent, you know, I was still getting booked, but not, you know, I was also holding back, you know? It's like you can't talk about, oh, I'm just a slutty girl who used to get pregnant all the time. You know, it's like, how often can you tell that? You know, it's just, it's old. And it wasn't me, and it wasn't authentic. And I think people saw that. So finally, and then the reason why I started talking about being trans, a friend of mine said, oh, my friend came up to me, and she said, oh, Jay isn't coming out yet. And I thought, like, if people thought I was hiding it, I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want anyone to think that, because that wasn't the case. I just didn't want to advertise it, like, and be judged solely on that.
I want to tell you that I think that very often we sell the American people short. Mm-hmm. And I actually believe that for the most part, if you're really funny, like if you could Greer Barnes it in terms of... then it wouldn't matter what... I mean, you might find some creep somewhere in anywhere. But I don't think any audience would mind. Mm-hmm. I remember nobody thought we'd ever have a black president. We had a black president. He won a majority of white votes. This movie, Black Panther. Oh, nobody's interested in the black. Is the biggest movie ever. What's his name? Eddie Izzard in England is kind of trans or trans, whatever he is.
Well, he did recently come out as trans, right, actually.
And nobody cares. And I think that it can be used as an excuse. And I think that people will surprise you in how accepting they can be.
I 100% agree with that. Yeah. My thought though is like I think someone who's booking a room, they're gonna have that prejudice.
They may make the same mistake that I'm describing. Yes.
Yes.
I agree with that.
I think they might. Whereas like, I mean, I perform, like I have performed in the Midwest before. I was in this, do you know the Great American Comedy Festival?
That's Eddie Brill.
Yeah. They were great. It was a small town in Nebraska. It was like a big theater. They loved me. Yeah. It was the greatest feeling in the world. And you know,
this is a common mistake. There was always like people who decide the sitcom world. Oh no, that's too Jewish. That's too Jewish. And then Seinfeld managed to sneak through the most Jewy sitcom you could ever imagine, right? Only happens to be the biggest sitcom in history. Nobody cared.
Transparent,
all those
I think,
people
yeah.
were so worried about people. How will people relate to this Jewish New York? No, it was funny. And that really was enough. Noah's nodding his head yes. That means you agree with me? Or?
Yeah, no, I do agree.
I must say, were I you, I'd certainly be a little bit afraid, though. You know, because you only need a couple of nasty people to ruin the evening.
That's true.
Yeah. Right, well, I agree with you that at the end of the day, funny is funny. And a lot of times you can get in your own head and prevent yourself from opportunities by just assuming that people aren't going to accept something. But I also do understand the trepidation in going to Middle America as a trans comic and even without giving them the benefit of the doubt, realizing that they're probably going to judge you a little bit differently at first.
Yeah, I'm also saying something else though, which is that, and this is
if you're funny, you can win them over.
That if you don't go over, it can be very tempting to blame it on the fact.
Sure.
Oh, I was this. Oh, I was that. And I've seen that. I saw it one time. You know, it was a big incident down here with a comic who had a terrible set, and immediately to the audience blamed it on their ethnicity, which was absurd because someone of a similar ethnicity had just destroyed, you know,
sure.
You know, and you know, and it was kind of painful to see how quickly they turned to that crutch of blaming it rather than looking at this. Oh, I didn't go over. I wasn't funny, you know, or maybe I got to be twice as funny because I'm trans or whatever it is. It can be whatever.
Yeah,
this is human nature.
Right, and I've never been like too scared. There's one time I used to do this thing if someone didn't react very well or crossed their arms when I said I was trans, I would like act like I'm hitting on them. You know, I thought that, and the crowd would love that. But then one guy just like got really pissed off and stormed out in the middle, and I'm just thinking, and this is like at an Elks Lodge or something like that. I'm like, all right, this guy's got to like.
Hey, you really doubled down on the discomfort.
Right. It's like he's gonna like build a gun rack out of my bones or something. You know, I'm like, I don't want to be. So that was like the only time I was actually a little worried. But
what is your sexual orientation?
I'm kind of lazy at this point. I'm still attracted to guys, but I'm just like, ugh, it's too much effort. I'm too busy.
Okay, here's something I've always been curious about. So, as a woman now who's attracted to guys, are you considered homosexual because you were born a man, or are you a heterosexual transgender?
It depends who you ask. Yeah.
So there's no set answer on how
that
works.
I would say like I consider myself a heterosexual trans woman. Okay. But, you know, it depends who you ask. You know, there's still people on Twitter who say, oh, you're a guy in a dress. Or they'll say, you're a fag in a dress.
But is there a consensus among the transgender community?
Yeah, no, that's how they look at. Like, if a trans woman dates women, they call themselves a lesbian. Okay. You know, or vice versa. So.
Now, if my daughter were trans.
Yes.
And wants to be a guy. But I know that a lot of. Girls now, when they become trans, whatever, they're cutting off their breasts.
Yes.
And
getting hysterectomies.
And
that just put a pit in your stomach, didn't it?
Yeah, and I'm telling you, as a parent, that would break my heart.
Uh-huh.
That would break my heart. How would you feel about that?
Well, you're asking the wrong person. I'd be fine with it, you know?
You'd be fine with it.
But, I mean, I can see where people think that. The hysterectomy is necessary if they're taking testosterone. They could cause fibroids.
The hysterectomy would bother me less than the
boobs. It's just like do you know how many trans men when they're in high school they wear like ace bandages or they wear these really really tight things to tie down their breasts just because they hate them so much? It's just something that they look at and it causes that anxiety. That's why they do it.
Question.
Yes.
When
he got so excited.
Ask a tranny day at the cellar.
This is fun. When you have a gentleman that shows interest in you, as gentlemen do,
when
do you tell them?
When do you tell them?
Yeah, it depends how drunk they are.
When do you tell them what's going on with you chromosomally?
Right, I tell them it up front. I don't.
So
even...
if I just came up to you at the bar and said, "Hey, how you doing? I'm Dan," and you said, "Well, I'm Jay." You're not going to say it at that point, right?
Right. It's like Mace.
If I say, "Can I buy you a drink?" Is it appropriate?
I wouldn't. If we started talking at some point during the initial conversation, I would mention it.
Very quickly, very early on.
Probably after the first drink. You know, after the first drink, because here's the thing: we might not click anyway.
Go ahead. I just want to get, because I was leading to the other way, which is you take your breasts off. That's heartbreaking as a father, but I suppose you can reverse that in some cosmetic way.
Right.
The other way, and people do change their minds and find that they're not happy.
They do. It's not as frequent as people seem to think, though.
But when
you
cut off the penis, that's like irreparable. I none of my business.
It's not being used.
Well, she had suggested. She said at the beginning of the.
I was joking.
She said at the beginning of the show that she'd be willing to answer any question.
Yes. Yes.
So,
did you or didn't you?
Yeah.
Do you or don't you?
Here's how I'm going to answer that question, and you're probably not going to like this answer. If not, it shouldn't matter. Okay, that's why. That's the only reason why. Okay,
it matters.
Unless I'm gonna date someone, unless I'm gonna have a sexual relationship.
Right. Well, yeah, it does matter very much.
It matters when you're gonna get booked.
The sexual exchange.
Exactly. But outside of that, it really doesn't matter.
It matters in terms of me having the inquisitive scientific mind that I have. You say you're uncomfortable. You always knew you weren't male, and you were uncomfortable with the male body. Well, what could be more male than a penis? Okay. And so if you're willing to tolerate a penis...
Now, here's the thing. You guys are going to look at me so differently.
Is that Kelsey Cook?
I'm going to answer. You guys will look at me so differently in about 5 seconds.
Yeah.
But yes, I'm still packing.
I don't look at you any differently.
I thought you were.
I thought you were, because I know that surgery is particularly drastic, and I don't think most transsexuals have had that surgery. Is that correct me if I'm mistaken.
It's probably about half, maybe less than half. Okay, because it's expensive and a lot of people can't afford it.
I have a question. I mean, no offense by this. do you take pride in your penis? Are you ashamed of your penis? No, like, you know, like if you had a nice big penis, would you be happy about it? Or
well, I dressed her up tonight. You know, we're going to the cellar. You know, taking her for a little stroll. No, I hate it. You know,
you do hate
but,
it.
But yeah, I don't know. If I had like $100,000 in my burning a hole in my pocket, and I get it done tomorrow. I totally get it done tomorrow.
But is the sensation going to be compromised? The sexual sensation. Mm-hmm. Right now, you have full sexual sensation. Right.
And that's the other thing.
And if it's you like, had a vagina, it would be might not be a perfect vagina.
Right, and there are issues with it too. Like you have to if you get like the fake vagina. You have to continue like what they call dilate it. So you have to basically stick a dildo up there like every day just to keep it from closing.
Well,
you
would, right. Well, a lot of women do that anyway.
Right. But you have to. Like, it's probably not as enjoyable when you're like, I don't know.
So listen. I mean, so.
But you talk about. No, if I could just.
Go ahead.
Well, just on the same theme. Now that you would think that might be a rich topic mm-hmm. for humor.
Yes.
The fact that you have this penis that you don't much care for.
Right.
Does that come up on stage?
I don't because
the topic come up on stage.
Because I don't want the people in the audience to. I want them to view a trans person as a trans person regardless of the genitals. And I don't want to bring it up like
I hear what you're saying, but you think of the jokes.
I know.
Well, you know, are you a comedian first or a trans first?
So it's but that's I feel like there is some responsibility to the trans community because there are people who like you can't afford it and who are judged differently. And I don't want someone like I don't want people to think like it's okay to say to a trans person like, do you still have a dick? You know, it's just like I'm fine, I'm thick skinned, I don't mind, I'll take it.
Is there tension in the trans community between pre op and post op?
Like, good question.
Do post op look down on the pre op?
I don't think so. Maybe a little.
Of course they do. That's human nature to divide up.
Because also at that point, it's a matter of class. Right. Like if you have enough money to get the surgery done.
If a plane load of trans people crashed in the Andes Mountains, they divide into...
They would separate.
They'd separate right. Just like Lord of the Flies.
Right. The haves and the have-nots.
The haves and the have-nots.
Vaginas and children first.
That's an interesting thing. You say you feel a responsibility to the trans community because that's kind of a heavy weight to bear. You know, as comedians, like, you know, we just do our thing. And I mean, I don't worry about any responsibility I have toward any community, and I don't think Noah does either. You know,
shame on you. No,
well, but,
no, but I mean, with me, I feel like
I don't know if black comedians feel that way. You know, uh-huh. They might have a responsibility toward the black community.
I feel a certain Chappelle responsibility to the Jewish community based on there are certain things like if I was to get a TV role or something. I don't know off the top of my head. I don't have an example, but there might be certain things that I wouldn't do to portray Jews in a certain negative light. Like, if they just wanted me to be, like, a penny-pinching, nebbish, embarrassing stereotype of a Jew, I might have
you.
Right, yeah.
yeah, I guess I wouldn't have grounds to be upset if they offered a raise and I took it.
Which would be the ultimate Jewy thing to do.
Well, lucky for
I will not do this.
Lucky for
less
you.
Than $1 million.
Oh, you're just negotiating.
But lucky for you, there's enough Jews in Hollywood that... any role probably wouldn't be too horrific.
So right. Here's what I would get. So you're Catholic and you're Jewish?
No, I'm Jewish. Jewish.
Are you kidding me? Listen to his voice.
Shut up, Garden.
You think there's what world is Dan Natterman
that's
not
right.
Jewish?
Well, I thought you said that at first.
I didn't say that, but okay. Thank you for lending credibility to the possibility that I might be a normal human being.
He's also 6 feet tall, for those of you listening.
Anyway, you were about to ask a question. You were about to pose a question.
I don't think so.
I have a question.
Okay.
I have a question.
Noam always has questions.
So this is what I think about when I think about these things. I feel like when the world becomes totally accepting of homosexuals.
When and if?
Then basically homosexuals can probably lead a happy, enriching, satisfying life.
Right.
I worry that transgender, no matter how accepting society becomes, because of all the issues we're discussing, because the anatomy will never be right, nothing is ever going to be a perfect fit, and it's difficult to be transgender and ever be fully happy.
Right.
Is that correct?
I mean, here you're right it's not perfect
unless the technology somehow becomes so sophisticated that you could really be 100% in every way, shape, or form a woman.
Yeah, I mean, like if there's like cloning or like putting my brain in a corpse or something like
Black Mirror, you could Black Mirror your upload your consciousness onto the cloud and download it.
Oh yeah, there we
go. Into I don't know who you'd like to be ideally.
Can you be content?
Well, that's just it. You get to, that's the goal of trans people, getting to a point where they can live with themselves. You know, it's like once you get to that point, you're never gonna be 100% there. But can you get 90? Can you get 95? And I think a lot of people in life have a shortcoming that they'll never be able to get to, you know, but can they live with it?
Well, where are you at? Are you at 90, 95, 75?
I'm close. I'm in the 90s, I think.
How can you be in the 90s if you still have a penis and you can't have sex with a man and you're attracted to men?
Well, because I'm just not that interested in sex. But for me, it's not really a priority.
Think about all the people who are normal by society's standards that still aren't fully satisfied or content with their own lives, and they're not even in the minority of oppressed people based on normal social standards. So it's like, you know, you're almost holding the transgender to a higher degree by asking them to be fully satisfied with life when most straight white men aren't even fully satisfied with life.
Right. Well, let me take it.
And women in general. I mean, you know, like the pressures on women in general to try and look a certain way, act a certain way, be.
Well, let me take it a step further. People ask you, Would you care if your son were gay? Mm-hmm. And you're supposed to say no. I wouldn't care.
Gross.
Say why would you care? Well, you can't give a reason why you would care, right? Somebody said, would you care if your son was transgender? I would say, yeah, I wouldn't want him to be transgender because I would worry that they'll never be able to be a fully content life.
That actually is the answer a lot of people would have given about gay kids 10, 20 years
ago. Right. That's
too.
What I'm asking. Is it actually mistaken vis-a-vis homosexuality? Mm-hmm. But is there actually a grain of truth to it? With a lot in life that a transgender has, I don't want to upset you.
No, not at all. I think yes, there is a greater truth that life is harder for a trans person, no doubt. But it's what's the option? What's the alternative?
No,
to be miserable? You know?
No, I'm not.
I think you have to look at it that way.
Besides,
and most trans people I know are happier now than before.
Besides your sexual anatomy,
yes.
Is there any other aspect physically that you are working on or would like, well, wish were different?
Stop staring at my boobs. I saw that.
I wasn't staring at your boobs.
Yes, they are fake. They are fake.
They're pretty good, though.
Thanks, but, right? But aren't they? Like, I got some Canons. I went in for
that. Is that a C cup?
It's actually a double D.
Double D?
No, get out of here. It's bursting.
It was a loose shirt.
It's a loose shirt.
I didn't see that.
I'm such an idiot. I went in for like the consultation. I was like, I was thinking like a B, it's like big B, small C, and he's like, we'll see. But then I trusted him, and I was like, well, do what you think is best. And
no, they don't look too big.
No, I think.
But did you start to transitioning a little bit older, right? So that.
Well, yeah, like 20s.
So that makes it more difficult to be.
Oh, yeah.
To pass.
Yeah. No, if I started when I was 6, forget it. I'd be a knockout.
How tall are you?
5'11. Okay. Like 5'11. So, yeah. So.
They'd be tall by
women. I think when they intervene chemically before puberty, you're not going to get.
Right. You're not going to get like the Adam's apple or the deep voice or the tallness or the body hair or the receding hairline, all the male traits that people hate.
I have another question.
Yes, you in the back with the headphones.
I saw Jim Norton. It made me think of a question. What is with these dudes who claim that they're like regular straight men,
mm-hmm.
but they love to sleep with trans?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're all over. They're dating sites for it.
What is that?
I love how you looked at Jim and thought of that.
Oh, because you know Jim is, I mean, he's well known for his.
Jim, are your ears burning back there? it's a fetish like any other.
It's a fetish like any other.
Yeah. Okay, but are they gay?
Well,
I think they could. They not only are they not gay, they're straighter than you are because they love women so much that they don't care if she has a penis.
I feel like I'm a gateway to to gayness.
I think it's gay.
I mean, yeah, and here's
if they still have a penis, I would consider that gay.
What if they only like being on top of a trans woman or only like getting BJs from trans women?
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, some some just. They're
this
just
is
like,
the existential crisis of 2018.
Face down, they're face down within minutes, you know. But
you must be. I mean, human. Humans
yes,
naturally want to have intimacy, and a straight man without that any kind of fetish, whatever it is going to be turned off by you having a penis, or he might even be turned off even if you had a prosthetic, whatever it is, vagina. You know, just the knowledge might. So you might find yourself hooking up with these guys who have these fetishes, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that's like most of I'm very careful with who I date.
You said you're attracted to men, right?
Yeah.
Would you date a woman who transitioned to being a man but still had her vagina?
Oh,
his vagina.
Absolutely.
That would be perfect.
That would be, that could work.
There are couples line up.
All right, you want to get your mind blown? There are couples like that where the trans woman impregnated the trans man and they had kids.
I think that doesn't
freak me out, but that's interesting.
It's different, right? Yeah. It's different. But no, I mean, like,
so then the trans man gives birth.
The problem is, like here's, and women will overlook like a trans man with a vagina, like they do 9 times out of 10. Guys though are very uptight in general. You know, like, I mean, guys in general just don't want to be like, you know, like, growing up, like if you're called a fag, that's the worst thing ever. You know,
women, so
like,
women, oh,
I'm not gay,
much,
I'm not gay.
Women have much bigger hearts.
Oh, totally.
And like they have souls. Yeah, you're like a cop get shot in the head. Like there was some, I think it was on 60 Minutes or something one day. This cop, they were newlywed. They just got married. Like 2 days after they got married, this cop got shot in the head as a vegetable. This woman sat by his hospital bed for 35 years, you know, taking care of him, you know? Can you picture a man doing that?
No. Are you kidding me?
Well, I would hire a nurse and be done with him.
Right. The like, man would be there to try and hit on the nurses, and that's it. That's exactly. The only reason.
So are you still, in that nature, do you have the feminine devotion nature, or are you still a dude?
I haven't found out yet. I haven't been.
That sounds like you're still a dude to me.
I mean,
it sounds like you suspect.
But the thing is, like, I really have like very little interest in carrying on a relationship, sexual or otherwise. I'm just don't. I have a low sex drive, and if it happens, I would like to think that I'd be the sort of person who stands by their man, so to speak.
Well, I think Noam is talking about a pretty extraordinary case.
Right.
Not to say that all women would do what you've just described, standing by a bed for 35 years.
But women do. Women really.
Women can be amazing.
If I were able
but
to cash,
you know,
in on the guy's pension, maybe.
Now, I don't know if you want to at some point talk about Mrs. Maisel.
Yeah, I want to talk to Noah.
What a perfect transition.
Well, transitions
can
be rough.
It used to be Mr. Maisel.
It's called the amazing,
the marvelous,
wonderful
Mrs.
world
Maisel.
Of Mrs. Maisel.
The marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
The marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
On Amazon Prime, yeah.
This is yet another. There's Crashing, of course.
Right.
There, Louis is no longer on the air, but this is yet another show about stand-up comedy. You'd think there's enough already.
Well, it is, but it's different. It is very different than all of them. In one, it's an hour-long dramedy as opposed to a 30-minute sitcom, and it's about a woman whose husband left her, and she started doing stand-up, and actually 90% of the show takes place offstage separate from her pursuing a career in comedy. It's actually much more about the family dynamics in the world of 1950s Upper West Side Jewish Manhattan than it is about the world of stand-up comedy. So there's a lot going into the show that's different than the rest of the shows about stand-up. And another big difference is, to my knowledge, she's the only character out of all the shows of stand-up who didn't actively come into the show wanting to be a comedian. If you watch the show, she kind of accidentally stumbles into it. Whereas Crashing is about Pete's kind of journey and quest to become the comedian he's always wanted to be. Louis already was a comedian in his show.
Who stars in your show?
Rachel Brosnahan plays Midge Maisel, the title character.
Is she well known?
No. Her big break was she was a prostitute on House of Cards for a while, and that's where people knew her from. But this
With Doug Stamper, the one that...
I didn't watch House of
Rachel
Cards. Rachel Brosnahan, yeah.
I think her name was Rachel on the show, too, on House
Probably
of Cards.
Probably so. I didn't watch House of Cards, but I heard it was a brutal death, right?
Like, yeah, I think her name was Rachel on the show,
so that's
too.
That's her. The biggest name on the show, her father is played by Tony Shalhoub.
Yeah, Tony Shalhoub. He's Lebanese, I believe, or something
yes,
of that nature.
Yes, he is.
Monk.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it is tangentially about stand-up, and certainly as the season goes on and she gets a little bit better on stage, it's more about that, but it's definitely not a show about stand-up.
And when you were on one of these streaming shows, do they tell you your ratings?
No, we know nothing about how many people viewed it.
But I think it's
disconcerting.
You can see how many 5-star ratings it got by Amazon users. And it won a Golden Globe, so critically, the acclaim is there.
Uh-huh.
But we actually have no idea how many people did or did not watch it.
Well, the guy that works at the Mailboxes, etc., which is no longer called Mailboxes, etc., but it's a similar type of store that I go to across from me, he knows I'm a comedian because I send comedian-type stuff there.
Sure.
But anyway, he said, have you seen Mrs. Maisel's? He was all excited, like, well, listen, I hadn't seen it. So he's watching it.
I was biased, obviously, working on the show. I had a feeling it was a good show. I was reading and helping write the scripts and enjoyed it. But I had no idea it was going to take off culturally the way it did. And I will say it was a perfect storm politically for the show. I mean, it aired literally in the heart of the Me Too movement. It's a very female-centric, strong female lead character show. So I think it resonated with where we were at in society at the time it was put out.
I got to watch the show. I've been watching. I've been binge watching Crashing. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
What do you like Crashing? No, obviously you're going to say you do.
Let's face it,
you couldn't really say you didn't.
I do like Crashing. Their elements of the portrayal of a beginning open mic comic that kind of ascended too quickly. Like, it's one of those things, it's an inside baseball thing, where as a comedian you would realize how unrealistic it is for Pete, an open mic comic, to suddenly walk into a place like The Cellar and get on stage. But I do think it is a good show. I do enjoy watching
it.
I think the people I know are great in it.
You watch either of these shows, Jay?
I don't have HBO or Amazon Prime, so I've watched, like, I have watched a couple, streamed a couple of Crashing.
Either of those things either.
Yeah. Crashing is really good. I just started watching it this week.
Yeah. I think Artie is great in it.
When is your episode? You're at the end of
my episode was the first episode of the season two.
Oh, that's right. So
that's it for me.
That's
Pete,
it for you?
Pete crashed your birthday party,
I didn't see it.
And Rachel's on that one too.
You didn't see it? Is that because you don't like
it,
watching yourself?
I don't like to watch me.
Yeah, I agree.
But I heard good things. Although my part I think was a lot bigger than ended up being shown. But in any case,
well, how would you know? You refused to watch.
I get the sense.
You were the star of episode one.
I get the sense. You can kind of tell according to the tweets that you're hearing.
Did they give you a bunch of lines, or did they just
they give you lines and they tell you don't pay too much attention to these lines. The Crashing is very improv based. They give you a bunch of lines and they say, but these are suggestions more than anything else, and you improv it. And you do it a million times, and sometimes Judd will shout something out, or the director, whoever he might be. Judd doesn't direct every episode, but he might yell out from the back of the room, say this, and then you say that. Well, I'm going to try this, and then you try that.
Are you comfortable acting?
I'm like a fish to water in the acting game. and I'd like to do more of it, because stand-up, as you don't know, you may know, but I don't think you do know, I never liked it.
Really?
Never liked it.
Really?
Very stressful.
So then what'd you get into it for?
To get out of it. I thought I was going to be a TV star. I looked at Seinfeld and Roseanne, all these people. Figured, all right, I get my 20 minutes of funny shit. And they got their 20 minutes of funny shit.
And now you're just in too deep?
I'm so deep. Yeah. Also, the dream is still alive.
Sure.
I'm still waiting
for the Dan Adaman show.
You know, the one thing about this business that it does give you is the dream. Like, if I were a lawyer, even if I were a very successful lawyer, the best I could hope for is being a lawyer. And that doesn't excite me. I'm sure it excites some people. It doesn't excite me. I'd have no chance of greatness. Now I got a chance, albeit a slim one.
So you still don't like it, though? In theory, 15 minutes from now, you got a set. You're not excited about going to hit the stage.
I don't have a set 15 minutes. I'm saying theoretically. I like to come here. And they're opening a room in Vegas, and that sounds like fun.
I love Vegas.
I don't enjoy headlining. I don't enjoy the long where it's all me and it's very nervous. Go ahead, Jay. You had a question.
I was just curious if you liked writing like scripts and screenplays and that.
I have done that. Yeah, yeah. I have, and with no great success.
Give one to Judd. Give it to Judd.
It's not that simple.
I'm sure he loves
that. It's not that simple.
yeah. You popped on screen episode one. He's waiting.
I remember you. You're funny. Here, read this.
So you love Vegas, Noah?
Oh, I love Vegas. But I'm a gambler.
Did you know that the Comedy Cellar is opening up a room in Las Vegas?
I did. I did know that, and I was excited to see that.
Well, okay. First of all, a few things to say. You know, we also have a Comedy Central pilot going on here.
Right.
And, you know, I had a lot of beef. It wasn't people at Comedy Central, the people shooting the pilot, because of how I wanted the Comedy Cellar to look. And on Crashing, they have these shots of the Comedy Cellar or the Comedy Cellar.
Yeah.
And they're so good. And you feel like you're in the room. And that's what I wanted the TV show to look like.
And you already saw on the TV show it does not look like that?
Just for, you know.
And they would not do it.
Just for the non-regular listeners or the new listeners, we have a pilot. The Comedy Cellar has a pilot with Comedy Central wherein we show clips of comedians talking about the week's events on stage. Think Best Week Ever, but in a stand-up format.
Is it scripted or no? I mean, do they know ahead of time what they're going to talk about?
The comics write jokes based on the week's events, be they
like a monologue. Yeah.
So no, it's already cut up and done. It's already, for sure it's not going to look the way you want it to look.
I know.
Well, the pilot, but maybe when they go to series, if they go to series.
But what got me is that it's like, I hate that expression, think outside the box. But it's like nobody wants to think with some sort of risk involved. So they don't want to stray too far from the way they've seen it done by somebody else, you know? But it seems to me you just look at Crashing, you see how you really feel that you're in the room with this comedian. It's tight and it's claustrophobic and it's awesome, you know? And I think a TV show like that would be great. But anyway, I suppose I'm wrong. I don't know.
Noam, unfortunately, has, for the first time, I guess, in his life, because he's always been the boss.
Had to take direction.
Now
from
he has.
It's horrible. How do you deal with it?
He has
it's
bosses. Yeah. Yeah, and he has people. They're putting up the money. They make the rules, even though it's Noam's club. And he's.
And my idea was my idea too. But anyway.
But that's screenwriter that knows, you know, that their script gets completely changed.
Sylvester Stallone.
From the executives.
Sylvester Stallone wouldn't sell out for Rocky. He had that script. He wasn't going to do it unless they.
Well, you didn't negotiate. That in your contract.
I know. I made a lot of mistakes in the last year. And then Vegas, I think, is shaping up to be...
You just got back from Vegas, didn't you?
What a dumb idea opening in Vegas was.
Are you being serious?
Oh, totally serious.
Why?
Because it's just a lot of pressure like I've never known before. And a lot of money. And I have...
How often are you going to go out there to check on the room?
I don't know the answer to that. And
Who's your Bugsy Siegel? Who are you sending to watch the Vegas?
Outside Steve is going to go out there for a while.
Okay.
But I just don't know that anybody's going to come. Anybody in the audience? Like, I'm speaking of Bugsy Siegel. Like, I think about that. Yeah. Like, welcome to Flamingo. Oh, somebody get us a fuse, and there's a leak. You know.
Sure.
Sorry, we're going to have to close for renovations when nobody shows up.
What casino? What casino?
At the Rio casino. Okay. And it's owned by Caesars, and, you know, Penn and Teller are there, and you know, it's not the most upscale casino, but it's okay, and it's pretty busy. I just don't know that anybody's going to come. And if they do come, and it's successful, I don't know if I'm going to care. Like, I don't know what I was thinking. I have three kids at home, a new baby. What do I want to be bothered with Vegas for?
I mean, was this idea out of nowhere, or did someone bring it to you?
I'm going to tell you where it came from, and I'm not proud of it.
Really?
And it's not like me. I was in Vegas one time, and I saw stupid Robert Kelly up his big mug on that huge jumbo screen out in front of Caesar's Palace or wherever it was, you know, with an ad for his show, wherever his show was. It was at one of the comic clubs. Maybe it was at the Improv. When it was the Improv. I don't know. I don't remember where it was. And I said to myself, fuck, Comedy Cellar should be up there. Like, I should have that, you know? And I'm not ever really driven by that sort of thing. But for some reason, I said, why are these schlubs, you know, who I know don't run their rooms with the integrity that we try to, who don't always have a great show, who put checks down during this, why are they like the apparent top of the heap? You know, because that's what it appears when you go to Vegas. They must be the... And why am I just a... You know, this was actually... Might have even been before the Underground was open, but we were just... And that's when I got the idea. So I started reaching out to some casinos, and they wanted ridiculous deals. So I left one offer on the table, which was like less than half of what the deal they asked for was. And I thought that was the end of it. And I walked away. And then they came back and said, okay, we'll take it. And I said, oh, I never thought that would happen. And then I said, okay, I'll take it. And then after that, you know, I had a baby and another baby. Like, my life kind of changed. So... But anyway, so the genesis was from a bad place, which was kind of a little bit ego, or it wasn't money, and that's the worst thing, and that's past. I don't have that urge anymore because we've had other things, other successes, and a TV show would be all that, plus I wouldn't have the headache of running a room, right? So a Comedy Central show would be way more happy. So anyway, so that's it. But I have really good relationship with the people I'm working with at Caesars, and the room is going to be beautiful. It is going to be the best room. And the comedians are going to like playing there. And it can be a lot of good things about it. And if it makes money, that'd be nice too. But I don't know.
I forgot to order the roast chicken again. God damn it.
Order the roast chicken.
Because the roast chicken, as you don't know this, Jay, but the roast chicken takes 20, 30 minutes
That's
to prepare.
That's your only fucking answer about my Vegas thing?
Well, we'll get to your Vegas thing. But first thing,
I prefer to order
the roast chicken in the middle of the podcast so it's ready by the end of the podcast.
There's no chicken in Vegas.
But wouldn't you know it?
That's right.
I always forget to do it. Is Sarah the waitress today? Could I have the roast chicken? But you know how I like it with the horseradish potatoes and the veg. Okay, now.
Oh, you know, Jim.
Yes.
How do you know, Jim? don't answer.
No, but she's really funny. We've done gigs together. I actually want to do more gigs with Jay. She's great.
So you recommend it? Well,
no. How come nobody ever recommended it to us?
Because I've only seen her here a couple of times, and if I saw her hanging out here, I would have recommended it to you in a second. But yeah. I wasn't sure exactly where she was. Yeah, but yeah, she's really funny.
I'm gonna look.
What's the process? First, you look her up online, and then, and
on
only
back,
then.
First is on Backpage, and then.
And then, if only that. Come on now, don't be silly.
you be careful what site you look up.
You look her up.
Whatever
on,
your site
don't just Google my name.
You look her up. You watch her YouTube video. Then and only then, if it likes what he sees, he will call you in for him and Esty will call you in for an audition. But I hope that I'm rooting for you because you seem like a nice young lady.
Oh, thank you very much.
We need a transgender comic here, that's for sure. So people would stop calling me a bigot.
I think you know, Noam often poo-poos the notion of diversity in comedy for diversity's sake, and I hear him, and I
poo-poo diversity in every aspect of life.
But in comedy, there is some value to diversity because intrinsic in the diversity is a different point of view as a comedian. In other words, obviously, a black comic will talk about different things than a white comic, and a trans comic will talk about different things than a non-trans comic. So there is some intrinsic utility to diversity. True or false?
It's a slippery slope. You bring in one trans comic, then you'll need gender-neutral bathrooms that'll start filtering in.
I have a problem with diversity being a goal.
Well, I hear what you're saying.
Hey, if I'm not funny, if you don't think I'm funny,
it shouldn't be a goal.
That's right.
It's a business. It's a business.
It's a business.
If I'm not funny, I should quit and go back to working at Trader Joe's or whatever. It's like the whole point is to be funny.
I'm with you that funny over everything, funny first.
But
absolutely.
Different points of view are.
Diversity, just for diversity's sake, is no good. But I will tell you, when I'm on the road, like if I headline, I'm thrilled if either my host or my feature aren't just a straight white man. Because just the idea of a different point of view for a little bit of time for the audience to get a break on perspective, it does make me feel a little bit better going on stage afterwards.
Well, listen, you're describing something which obviously can't, you know, I can't be denied. And it's an analogy, like if you're presenting a musical performance, you don't want to have 10 ballads in a row.
Right.
So anything can be monotonous. So is that diversity for diversity's sake? No, that's just you need to mix things up monotonous. But I think when we're discussing diversity with the political connotation,
we're discussing something much different
than that. You can get that diversity and difference of point of views from six different white guys too, you know?
That is true.
Or six different black guys. And I just don't like the fact. Listen, I said this before. When I was a kid. When I was a kid, you know, bigotry was the enemy. And one possible evidence that you were bigoted was, well, how come you only have white guys? You know, so that looks like you probably are being discriminating in some way. You're probably discriminating in some way. So diversity was kind of evidence that you were doing the right thing. Now it's shifted. Now it's, we don't care really anymore whether you do the right thing. As a matter of fact, even if you are doing the right thing and picking the six funniest thing, that's not okay. Diversity is the goal. It's not about being it's not about playing everything straight up and merit. It's not about merit anymore. It's about diversity, and I'm against that. Except of course in the NBA, where nobody has a beef if everybody on the court is black, right? You want to field that question? Why is that?
Nobody has a beef, but it's also no secret that the NBA is head over heels about any white North American basketball star they can get.
But they won't play them unless they deserve to play.
The basket in the,
and
the
I don't want
the
to play them either unless they can play. But there's a lot of pressure for me to play them.
There is a difference between like being overtly as diverse as possible and not being discriminatory. You know, so you can still be not just if this club isn't, you know, like you've had women, you've had black comics, you've been more women than most clubs probably. So it's clear that you're not being discriminatory.
If you don't discriminate, there should be diversity.
So I don't think anyone would have a beef. I know there's that article, but I don't think anyone would have a beef necessarily with you if you didn't hire someone because they were trans, you know?
Yeah.
I get that, 100%.
Look, I take pride in the diversity when I see it because it gives me kind of a happy feeling about the human race, you know? It's nice to see everybody just mixed without regard to sex or color, whatever, and just all hanging out and socializing and performing together. That's nice. I'm not a monster, you know?
Yeah, the soft side of Noam comes out. That's beautiful.
But I want that to happen for the right reason. I don't want that to happen because I'm a fucking fraud.
Exactly.
I don't want to come to you and say, listen, I booked you because you're trans. Mm-hmm. I don't, or.
And I don't want that either. Yeah. Unless, well, never mind. I take that back.
But I mean, you hear the stuff that's going on in Google now where they're like, they're turning themselves into pretzels to get diversity. I'm like, why do they have to have diversity at Google? As long as they're not discriminating against anybody.
That's the one where the white guys are suing him, right? Google or is it Amazon?
There's white guys suing. There's people from every angle in this. Google. There's a story from every angle in Google. But the point being is like, nobody actually suspects Google of being like, we only want Asians or we only want white guys. We presume Google is probably hiring what they think are the best candidates without regard. So if it turns out to be 60% Asian, why is that a problem? Why is that more of a problem than the NBA turning out to be 80% black? I don't. Why do they have to limit Asians at Harvard? If Harvard turns out to be 75% Asian, aren't they humans? Aren't they Americans? Who cares if they're Asian? It bothers me. We talk about this, you know, ad nauseum on this show.
That is just a common theme that we do.
Just stop judging it, because you can never break out of it. And this becomes the way I see my children are beginning to pick up on this. Like, they're like, you know, it's well, like, I don't want them thinking that way.
I mean, there are the one thing that I see, like, I agree with you 100%. But if you see, like, the reaction that, like, there wasn't really a black superhero before Black Panther. Yeah. And then, but it had to be a good movie. But now, like black kids can look at that and think, wow, a superhero that looks like me. And that's representation is a great thing. But I mean, if they would put out a shitty movie, it wouldn't have defeated the purpose. It would have been terrible.
I don't think it's a great movie, but I definitely don't have a problem. Let me tell you about Black Panther. I don't have any problem with Black Panther. And this is the irony you kind of hit on. On the one hand, of course, a black child always seeing all white superheroes, that's not a good thing.
Right, or a black girl having to play with a white Barbie doll, that's not a good thing. You know what I mean?
On the other hand, it's not quite as bad. It's a worse thing now than it might be if we didn't focus so much on race.
Oh, yeah.
If we didn't force these kids to define themselves so much in terms of their race,
but you know what,
then the fact that a black superhero was a black superhero but you're right, it's a good movie, but it's not a great movie. It's getting
Let me tell you why it's not a great movie. It wasn't my favorite Marvel movie. Thor Ragnarok.
Did you see it?
Wait,
before you go.
Okay.
I'm going to spoiler alert.
Okay.
Spoiler alert.
Black Panther dies at the end. It's tragic.
Any movie where the main character gets thrown in a fight to the death, and rather than kill him, they throw him over a waterfall and expect us to think, oh, he's dead. And without, I mean, it's not a great movie.
Oh, I don't think they thought they were fooling anybody by making people think he was dead. That was like
two-thirds of the way through? They knew it's like, all right, we have a half hour left. He's obviously alive.
It's such a trite device, as was the they took a whole James Bond thing, like the Q thing with the technology.
I'm not a superhero comic book guy, but I enjoyed the movie.
I enjoyed it, by the way.
You want to hear a deep theory here?
Just not great.
I haven't
seen it. The 16-year-old girl is going to be the new Iron Man. That's my theory.
Oh, really?
Oh, that's not bad.
Because
awesome.
Robert
bad.
Downey Jr. is probably going to die.
Yeah, she could
work
for Tony Stark.
Way, no, Tony Stark's going to die, right? Robert Downey Jr.
You got
to
go.
Noah has to go perform.
Go ahead. I give it a 3.5 Black Panther.
Apropos of what you were saying is that kids, we shouldn't make them identify racially. I'm wondering how much of it might be innate. Very recently, there was a viral picture of a young girl, 2-year-old girl, staring at Michelle Obama.
Exactly.
Did you read about that?
No.
Staring at Barack Obama, a painting of Michelle Obama.
Don't tell me it's fake.
I'm not telling you it's fake. The point is she's 2 years old. Why was she staring at that picture of Michelle Obama? Was it because innately she, and she said, the girl thought she was like some princess or whatever. And so Michelle met her in real life. So the point is this girl's 2 years old. She hasn't had time necessarily, maybe she has, to pick up the racial nature of our society.
Oh, no, they pick it up.
Might it be intrinsically, when she saw somebody in a world that's 90% white, whatever it is on TV, et cetera, she saw somebody that looked like her in an art gallery, and innately, without being told that this woman resembles you, she innately...
It definitely has an innate aspect to it, for sure. I don't think it too. I noticed with my own kids, and I really tried to protect them from, like, my friend Rosalyn, who's always at the house. You know Rosalyn.
Of course I know.
She's black, and she's outspoken. She's always using the N-word, and she's always saying about black this and black that, and, you know, there's white folks this and white folks that. I'm like, Rosalyn, and I used to get mad. Please, I don't want my kids to... And my kids, until They were like 5 years old, 4 or 5 years old. Had no. If somebody would say the black guy, they look at you like, what do you mean, his pants? Like, they had no idea that there were different races. Only recently, I think I told us on the show, my daughter Mila described her boyfriend, her little first grade boyfriend, as black. She has a little black boyfriend named Jackson. And it was the first time I had ever heard her. That it was, you know, part of her worldview that there were different races, and it actually was heartbreaking. It's like, you know, she didn't have that naivete anymore. But yeah, it's innate. It's also, it's not just race, culture, you know.
I still think it's a great picture.
Humans divide.
It's a very cute picture. She's like got her mouth open. She's like seen something she's never seen before. But, you know, staring at that painting of Michelle Obama. It's quite cute.
But
no,
now she has a role model.
What did you think
really
of that
cool
painting?
The Michelle Obama painting.
I don't know. There are,
be honest.
Any of those presidential paintings, I'm like, all right, you don't need to, you know, whatever. But this was, you know,
I did not like
the
Michelle. I like Barack's.
Yes. Did you?
Yeah.
I was like, it's a little weird.
Who, Barack's?
All the leaves and stuff. I was like, it was a little weird.
Well, this is what I think. No. You know what? You make an interesting point. I thought both
I'm glad that African-American artists did both of those, by the way. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Yeah, no, but you didn't. That's fine. And you see, that's the thing. I don't care. I mean, I'm happy. If they want African-American artists, that's fine. I just wish it didn't matter. In any case.
Oh, true, 100%.
In any case, but I did think that as an aesthetic matter, both the paintings were so outside the style of everything that had come before that it was a pretty ballsy statement, you know? And I'm not criticizing that, but I could also... I'm really not criticizing it, but I don't know if I would have done that. I think I would have tried to split the difference somehow, only because I would not want to stick out like a sore thumb so clearly.
Did you see what Hannity wrote about how he thought that one of the veins on Obama's forehead looked like sperm?
Oh, no. But having said that, I thought that the
aesthetically...
The achievement of the portrait of Obama was really good.
You look
close up on that painting. It looks like him. His detail. It struck me as like that's a talented. Right. That's the work of a talented man.
Right.
The Michelle Obama one. That just did not seem like a good painting to me, at all. It doesn't look like her. It's not pleasing. It's just.
The only time I saw her picture was the 2-year-old staring at her. So it was like a sideways view.
Yeah, that's the only time I've seen that picture.
So I haven't looked at it up close.
I'm going to show it to you. Talk for a second. I'm going to show it to you right now, and then we'll sign off.
That artist who did Barack's, his other works, amazing. So yeah,
that's a good painting of Obama.
Right.
Michelle
and
Obama.
It's different. It's in your face a little bit. You know, it's like, by the way, this is me, you know, which is cool. So
yeah, I
he was, like him or not, at least he had a sense of humor. I thought he was a great president, and I voted for him both times.
Obama?
Yeah.
Oh, he has a fantastic sense of humor.
And such a great sense of humor, which our asshole now
doesn't think
he
was a great president, but he had a good sense of humor.
All right, looks a little more like Beyonce than Michelle.
Would you look at this and say, oh, this is a national, this is an artist who should be picked among all the artists in the world to do a portrait? This is not, I mean... I know that it's just does that look like is that the way Michelle Obama? I mean, does that capture her? It just doesn't. It simply doesn't. I defy anybody to tell me it does. And you know what? And this is the world we're living in.
Well, Picasso's picture.
I'm taking a huge risk of being called a racist by saying this. You know that people are judging me in a racial way because I'm saying I don't like this portrait done by an African American artist of Michelle Obama. I have to like it. Black Panther, I can't only say it's a good movie. It has to be the best movie ever. Otherwise, I'm suspect. I just think it was a really good movie. But it wasn't as good as X-Men to me.
Lie. Just tell everyone you're voting for Oprah, then go into the booth and do what you want.
You know what?
You go. Then everyone's going
to
be like...
I think Oprah, as opposed to a lot of things, Oprah has done some amazing things. Like, you cannot fuck with Oprah.
Are you overcompensating now to try and make sure people don't think you're a racist?
I've always said this about Oprah. Because I'm older. Oprah started out this little talk show.
Yeah, in Chicago, right?
Yeah, when this Phil Donahue was the king, mm-hmm. appealing to white ladies at home during the day. And this, again, talking about selling the country short, this black lady hooked in...
Overweight
black lady hooked in emotionally... with white female America, Republican America, you know, so deeply that Phil Donahue became a historical part of the historical record. That that's the kind of accomplishment of merit that nobody can question. And that's what's so nice about it. You don't have to wonder whether Oprah got her success because she was black or not. No, she worked at it. You can't say a fucking word about it. It was the real thing.
They say I'm the trans Oprah, so I don't know.
You agree with that about Oprah, right?
No, I agree that she's a trans Oprah.
No.
Thank you.
I mean,
that
is pure merit.
Yeah, Oprah's a phenomenon, sure.
That's an amazing accomplishment.
I like Phil. I liked Phil, good deal.
You're right.
I like the impressions of Phil.
But you can imagine
Daryl Hammond's impression.
You can imagine some executives saying, "If I go, oh no, why? You know, these white ladies are not going to want to watch this black lady, blah blah blah." And this was before things became viral. It bubbled up.
Right.
You know, that's an amazing. So that's a credit to her talent. So I would never dismiss Oprah at all.
I still don't want to see her movie though, Wrinkle in Time. Still not interested in that.
You're not interested in it?
No.
She's in it?
She's in it. Yeah, she produced it, I think.
No, she's a good actress. She was good in The Color Purple.
Yeah.
She's great. You can't say anything about Oprah. The only thing I don't like about her is when she has a musical guest on and they cut to her face and she's doing that, you know, like grooving face, how much she loves.
And
the
why
music.
Does she have to be on the cover of every one of her magazines?
Yeah, that's a little
weird, right?
Egotistical. Yeah, yeah. But if you have a teen magazine someday, you can be on
true.
There.
True.
All right. Are we gonna wrap it up?
I think we'll wrap it up there. Yeah, it's a good time to wrap it up.
Yeah, I do recommend everybody go see Black Panther. My kids loved it.
Why would you recommend a movie you didn't think was that great?
It was good. I enjoyed it. It's getting this kind of, because it's a cultural, I think it's just getting a little extra credit because of the politics of it. I think it's not quite as good as that. That happens. What was that movie that was the first woman?
Well, Wonder Woman wasn't as great of a movie as Thor Ragnarok, I thought, but it was more important.
Thor
I think,
Ragnarok
socially.
Was better, yeah.
Yeah, I think socially is more important, and it'll be known 10 years from now, but I think Thor Ragnarok was a better movie.
And people will continue to watch what was the movie that won the Oscar? Was the first? Oh, Hurt Locker.
Right.
It was the first female director, war movie, whatever. Nobody has ever watched that, won the Oscar Best Picture. Nobody has ever watched that movie again. It was not a good movie. It was just from time to time, you know, it's just things get over on the politics of it. They barely even show it on cable, and if they do, I bet you nobody watches it.
Yeah, it's on Netflix. I still haven't watched it.
Hurt Locker.
Yeah.
It's a totally Black Panther is way better than Hurt Locker.
Oh, yeah.
So that's all I'm saying. But I'm happy for the... I'm not a curmudgeon. I'm happy that for a post-racial America.
I want to hear Mike Lawrence's take on Black Panther.
Yeah, I would like to hear it. He's so funny on Facebook.
He's great. And Twitter, too. His Twitter page is, too.
Oh, I think
when he talks probably, wrestling.
He probably just echoes his Twitter on Facebook. What did he say that was so fun? So instead of focusing on Sir Mix-a-Lot's fetish for big butts, maybe we should focus on how honorable his honesty is. Because I like big butts and I can't lie.
Yes, I remember
something like
that.
It was so funny. I didn't do it justice.
He's
but
great.
Follow
He's
Mike Lawrence. He's one of the funniest. All right. Goodbye, everybody.
All righty.
Jay,
thank you very much.
We're going to check you out. And hi, Jim. We're wrapping it up, Jim.
Oh, okay, yeah. I had a good time on my set.
All right, good night, everybody.